Welcome to Historical Homicide. I am your host, Christina Bentley, here to take you into a disturbing yet thought-provoking journey into the dark past. My question for you today is this: where is the line between love and obsession? Is it a clear marker in the sand, a distinct line, a solid boundary that we tiptoe around? Or do we dip our toes in the muddy puddle? Not to splash exactly, but just to dabble. Maybe it's keeping a sweater from an old boyfriend, keeping a gift from an ex-girlfriend, looking up a long-lost lover through social media to see who really won the breakup, thinking of that person when you probably shouldn't. Is there any harm in keeping tabs? What keeps you coming back, reeling you in like you have a stronghold in their current life? Is their online life even their real one? It's all about the illusion. The illusion of control. September 23rd, 1899. It's an eventful year in world news. The Spanish-American War is ending, and the United States is acquiring new lands: the Philippines, Samoa, Guam, and Puerto Rico. Technology is continuing to improve as voting machines are approved by the U.S. Congress for federal elections. And while cars are being produced, only the extremely wealthy could afford such luxuries. In our little corner of the world, factory work is thriving. People are using bikes, buggies, or their own 2 feet to get from one place to another. Walking for a purpose, or taking a leisurely stroll, there are many little spots where people can meet up, gather, or find a secluded spot for something a little cozier. Today's tale orbits around one young woman in particular, Emily Adolfsson, a housekeeper, Swedish immigrant. But more than that, I think of Emily as a dreamer, a strong woman ahead of her time who is making her own way in the world. Next, we have Emily's dear childhood friend, Gustav Rosenqvist. He values Emily and believes in her dreams. Then, there's Frank Vennerholm, Emily's boyfriend. He shares an apartment on Windsor Street with his brother Gus, not too far from Emily's boarded home. All of the aforementioned players are in their late 20s to early 30s, Swedish immigrants, trying to make their way in an industrial American world. Let's see how their paths intertwine and their stories unfold. This account is passionate, but that's part of what romance is. It's passionate, and in this case, slightly obsessive. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's go back to the beginning. Emily, a young, ambitious woman, lives in Sweden but dreams of her life in America. In fact, she writes beautiful letters to her childhood friend Gustav about all the wonderful things she would do if she just had her chance to live in the United States. Gustav moved to the U.S. about 3 years ago, and Emily begs him to sponsor her ticket to America. Her dreams are inspiring, and he would love to give her the opportunity to achieve them. He buys her a one-way ticket to the biggest adventure of her life. And Emily, she's ready for this next chapter, to take control of her life. She arrives in Jamestown and, with help from Gustav, finds housing in the same building where he lives, at Mrs. Ekstad's home. Mrs. Ekstad takes in many boarders, mostly Swedish immigrants. What a wonderful new start. And to have neighbors from her home country, it couldn't be more perfect. Emily finds employment as a housekeeper for Mrs. Wilson, who is a kind employer. Life is good. During this time of new beginnings and transitions, Emily meets Frank Vennerholm. We don't know exactly how Emily and Frank meet, but their relationship is progressing into something fun, consistent, and public. Frank is an industry worker. He likes to have fun and spend all of his free time with Emily. They step out together, taking walks, enjoying each other's company, and Emily is introduced to Frank's family. All is as it should be. A new country, a new home, a steady boyfriend, and a good job. Emily's making a life for herself, proud of how far she has come. And at the end of every day, she loves to tell Gustav everything. They are kindred spirits, Emily and Gustav. From childhood friends to dreamers, they understand each other's journeys perfectly. Gustav has supported Emily in every step of her new life, and something about her presence, the feeling of home, soothes him. His life is eventful as well. He's engaged to a woman from a good family in Pennsylvania and will be moving soon to start his new life with her. But Emily can't help but think to herself, how could this woman know Gustav better than she does? Gustav deserves someone who understands him implicitly, simply, the way she does. They say goodnight to each other every evening and return to their respective rooms, even though their time together seems unfinished. There's so much energy between them, so much left unsaid and undone, until one evening their passions become too much and they give in to their feelings for one another. It's new and familiar all at once. They start to steal more moments together, breaking away for picnics in the park and something cozier in more secluded locations. Under the bridge in Faulkner quickly becomes a favorite spot for the two lovers to be alone. Even their neighbors start to notice all of the private conferences these two are having. But this isn't a love story. It's a murder story. Let's leave these lovers momentarily and talk about Frank. Oh, Frank. He's starting to notice some changes in Emily. Slightly withdrawn, pulling away emotionally, and he's not ready to let go of her. So, he does what good boyfriends do. He steps up his game. Frank surprises Emily at work, brings her flowers, invites her to spend more time with him and his family. He's doing his best to make her happy, to ensure that she sticks around. Frank can see that Emily may be having doubts. How can he convince her that they belong together? They're perfect for one another. They can't live without one another. He'll get a hold of this situation soon. He just needs to keep trying. Frank asks one of his sisters, who Emily is close to talk with Emily and see what's going on. His sister, who I never found a first name for, it was only in the papers referred to as Miss Vennerholm. So for the sake of today's story, let's make up a name for her. Let's call her Bessie. All right. So Bessie starts having little sleepovers with Emily. Some girl time. During these slumber parties, Bessie notices that Emily and her friend Gustav have a lot of discussions in private. The door is always cracked open as an illusion of innocence, a platonic relationship. But suspicious Bessie manages to spy on their conversations. She peers in and sees Emily in tears, stoically consoled by Gustav. He apologizes to Emily and leaves the room. Emily doesn't tell Bessie what's wrong, but prefers to keep it to herself. The next time Bessie is able to eavesdrop, she finds Gustav with his head on Emily's lap as Emily gently strokes his hair. This time, it's Gustav who is tearful. He's leaving for Pennsylvania the next day and is saying his goodbyes to Emily. A sad farewell. The not-so-secret lovers part. Now, Bessie tells Frank everything she has seen during her sleepovers at Emily's place. And there's buzz around Mrs. Ekstad's house about what the other boarders have seen between Gustav and Emily. It's all too much for him to handle, and Frank snaps. How could Emily do this to him? He has been a gentleman, the best suitor. He's been perfect for her. And for what? for her to be giving her affections to an almost married man? Frank decides to confront Emily. He surprises her at work and asks her to go out walking with him that evening. She accepts, and they decide to meet up later. Meanwhile, Frank goes back to his apartment to freshen up for his date. Well, confrontation, really. As he confides in his brother about his tumultuous love life, his friend Fred bursts through the door. Fred's got a hot date and needs to borrow Frank's straight razor for a smooth, close shave. He uses the razor in Frank and Gus's room, puts it back where he found it, and leaves. After the interruption, Frank gets ready and puts the straight razor in his pocket. He's on his way to call on Emily. The couple take a leisurely stroll on Feta Place and run into one of Frank's acquaintances, Miss Augusta Johnson. She's taking a walk with her sister, and they giggle to each other about Frank and Emily, who they imagine are looking for some privacy. The sisters take note of Emily's hat. It has beautiful lilies of the valley on it. Frank and Emily walk on, the tension rising between them. Frank takes Emily to a spot that she should find familiar. Under the bridge in Faulkner, her special place with Gustav. He knows. Frank knows. Panic sets into Emily as Frank starts yelling. Jealousy, hurt, and passion take over him. She cries and pleads with him. It's a spurned lover's quarrel. And at the height of it, a lone scream. Then silence. At just this moment, two men who had worked late happen to be walking home in the area. They hear a woman scream and rush down by the bridge to find Emily lying in the shallow water and sand, sputtering to speak. The men witness as Emily, slashed in the throat and hands, takes her last breath. We'll get back to this gruesome scene in a minute. Meanwhile, Frank, seeing the blood on his hands, makes a run for it. He trips and falls on his knee. Someone calls after him, but he keeps running. As he looks down, his shirt is covered in water and blood. He makes his way home. His brother, Gus, sees adrenaline-fueled Frank covered in blood, water, and muddy sand. His hands are scratched, his eyes wide. They get him into a fresh pair of clothes, go to the pharmacy to get salve for his cut hands, and stop by a clothing shop to get him a hat. That should take care of Frank's alibi. He stows the soiled clothes in a suitcase under his bed. There's no time to wash them now. That will have to wait. He sits on his bed and takes a breath. And hears a knock on his door. Before we continue with Frank, let's get back to Emily's body. It's a gruesome scene. Her hands are cut and scratched from defending herself, and her jugular vein has been slashed open. There is a spray of blood all over the ground and surrounding bushes. Her body is growing cold, but the men who found her call for help, for a doctor, for anyone. The neighbors hear the commotion, and many come down to discover the horrific sight. One of them being Miss Augusta Johnson. She recognizes Emily as the woman with the beautiful hat that she had just seen walking with Frank Venner home about 20 minutes ago. A doctor makes his way to Emily's body and pronounces her dead at the scene. After the police come, the doctor conveys Emily to the morgue for further review. Augusta tells the police what and who she saw. On her word, and with the information from the witnesses who saw a man running, they go directly to Frank's apartment to question him. Knock, knock, knock. It's the police, and we have some questions for Frank Vennerholm. As the police enter Frank's room, they do a search, finding the soiled clothing he had hidden. Even the fresh marks on Frank's body show the signs of a struggle. There's no hiding what he has done. But he tries, telling a tale of a fight he had just had with a large unknown man in town. The story is weak and unbelievable. He is arrested immediately. But one question remains. Where is the murder weapon? The police didn't find it with Frank. Even though Emily is dead, we're not finished with her story. Her body is sent to the morgue for an autopsy. Her cause of death seems pretty clear, but just to be sure, she is examined. During this posthumous procedure, a shocking discovery is made. Emily was 3.5 months pregnant at the time of her death. Now, let's rewind. Remember the interactions between Emily and Gustav that Bessie had eavesdropped on? Only after this discovery do we have better insight into what those discussions were really about. Emily had discovered she was pregnant with Gustav's child. Gustav, who was engaged to another woman, was on a set path for his future. And although he cared for Emily, when confronted with the news of an unplanned pregnancy, he would not deviate from his course. She would have to raise this child alone or get an abortion. He was remorseful, but felt stuck in his plans and guilty for leaving Emily in this condition. Emily reassured him that all would be well, to go and live his life, to fulfill his dreams. She was confident she could handle herself. She would get this situation controlled and taken care of, and Frank would be none the wiser. She called Dr. Bowers and asked him if he could alleviate her of her condition. When he refused, Emily was devastated. Gustav had already left, and the control she had on her life was crumbling. This occurred 3 days before she died. Now, it's obvious her body was cut, but with what? Police go back to the scene a few days later and scour the area for a weapon. They eventually find a straight razor lying in the bushes. In the height of his madness, Frank had dropped the weapon and fled. This is a pretty damning piece of evidence against Frank. There's no denying it's his razor. Why? Because a friend had made it for him. It's one of a kind. His buddy Fred, who had borrowed it earlier in the evening on the night Emily died, knew it right away. He testifies under oath that it's the razor he used in Frank's apartment. Frank's future looks grim. Augusta Johnson has identified him. Fred knows the specialty razor that was found at the scene. Emily's infidelity is the motive. Is there any escape from the terrible moment he lost control? His sister interrupts court proceedings with valuable information. Frank has an epileptic seizure disorder that can cause him fits of uncontrollable rage. She knows her brother, and he wouldn't act heinously if he was in his right mind. He has no criminal record. He's an upstanding citizen who has always worked hard for his community. This evidence sways the jury, but only momentarily. The prosecution points out a crucial fact. Frank brought the straight razor with him on his date with Emily. His act was clearly premeditated. If he couldn't have Emily, no one would. The case is clear, closed. Frank murdered Emily in the first degree. His sister is overcome with emotion and clings to her brother. She wraps her arms around him and sobs. He does his best to keep his composure, but Frank bites his lip, his eyes tearful. His sister is gently removed from the courtroom. On June 25th, 1900, Frank Vennerholm is sentenced to death by electric chair. And that's today's story. It starts off beautifully, but quickly unravels. Jealousy, obsession. People's actions spiral quickly when they value control above all else. Emily was able to take charge of her life, but ultimately let her relationship with Gustav consume her life, taking away everything she had worked so hard for. Frank's obsession with making Emily stay in his life was his downfall. When we hold on too tightly to things not meant for us, the things that are meant for us will pass us by, and we're left with the fallout, the loss of control. Thanks for listening to Historical Homicide. Join me next time on May 3rd for our episode, Unfinished.